Hey, my name is Muck. I'm an activist and a musician. I like to make fun things, and I like to make a world where everyone can make fun things. I am in a couple of bands. I'm in a band called Beast Folk with another friend of mine. And I was in the Omega Point last year, and I was in Sky Street before that. You can find all that stuff online. Yeah, what else? That's probably it for now. I put music out on SoundCloud as Echo. It's a name I've had around for ages, and it's sort of the catch-all project for things that don't fit in with bands. So a few weeks ago, as a way of making myself more productive and more accountable to my productivity, I joined a group of musicians who sit together on an internet chat, and the commitment is that we make and put out one new original song per week. I have also recently come into a bunch of music technology that I haven't had access to in the past. So through the course of the Melbourne lockdown, I've been locked in my house by myself because my housemates went to New South Wales before the borders closed. But the good news is I have all of their music gear. So I have great opportunities to do stuff I've never done before. So for this commitment, this weekly one new song a week commitment, I decided to use that as a chance to get much better at making music with computers, because I usually make music with bands. I play instruments, I play guitar and piano, and I sing. And I've sort of always looked down on computer music to a certain extent. But now that I can make it myself, I see how broad the possibility is for expression. And so the one that's just come out is Praise Be. And that was actually the first track I made for this commitment. The one that we're here talking about today, The Call, is the most recent one. That started and finished last Sunday. The way I've approached these songs is very much picking up the tools that are nearest available to me. For instance, the lyrical themes. Praise Be is sort of sung from the lyrical perspective of a guard on the walls of a compound in a future civil war.
Getting our pretenses right.
Reason is, I was listening to a podcast called It Could Happen Here by a journalist I really respect by the name of Robert Evans. He envisions a second American Civil War where, well, what happens if Christian dominionists take over swathes of the country? What happens if left-wing anarchists take over swathes of the country? So I was really, really affected by this podcast and by these horrific visions. And so when it came to putting words over the top of some music, I grabbed the thing that was nearest and thought, what about if I am a guard in a compound in one of these future sort of, you know, maybe religious dominionist sort of situations? And then similarly with The Call, which is sort of vaguely and generally about the fact that we're running out of time with the climate, the fact that things are getting worse and worse, and that I can't seem to wake anybody up. I can't seem to make this obvious to the people around me. Even if I tell them how fucked we are, they're going to continue on with these lives. So the lyrics in The Call, there's very few of them, but they go like this. How long until the fences fall? How long until the waves come for us all? Holding us still in a wasted evermore. How long until you answer the call? Again, sort of sitting down to write this, it was picking up the tools that I had to hand. So lyrically, I just had this frustration and this difficulty in communicating the urgency of the climate situation. That's what I sung about. How long? How long until, you know, we die? How long until the waves come for us all? Holding us still in a wasted evermore. What I'm trying to get at there, the way the world is set up now is to hold us still, to sort of keep us within the rhythms that we've grown up with, in a wasted evermore. So it's a sort of Ponty way of saying that it is going to, the future will be nothing if we remain in this situation.
How long until you answer the call?
As a musician, as an artist, as a producer, I'm at the early stages of maturity when it comes to making music with computers. I have some familiarity with it. I did about 3 months worth of audio courses a couple of years ago that sort of just got me in the door with this is what a studio looks like, this is what a mixing desk looks like, this is what the inside of a computer program looks like. Here's how to get around it. In the years since then, it really has been fairly rudimentary experiments. Really, it is these last couple of things that have really branched out into making full songs rather than grooves. Like, I think you can hear on my SoundCloud, there's a very sort of cobbled together kind of groove thing that I made for an XR video, which is, you wouldn't call it a song, it's just a series of loops put together. These are new songs, and so it's really just pressing buttons till I find something I hear that I like. I'm of long experience with music, so if I need to come up with a new part, I can do that really quickly. But the difficulty is choosing the sound for it in the computer, making it sound nice with everything else. That's where the learning curve is twiddling with knobs until it doesn't sound so hissy, or trying far out there experiments like reversing things or slowing them down or repitching them, which you can hear a lot of in the track, although I hope it's fairly well disguised. In terms of the technology that I'm coming to grips with for the first time, is Ableton, the music software, which, you know, is sort of the top of the line professional standard for a lot of dance music producers. And as a rock guy, I never thought I'd have any use for it. And so I'm sort of taking my understanding of music from rock and jazz and choral music, which is the music I participated in, and then trying to make that work in a sort of dance context. So when people sort of lob the stereotype of, oh, you're a musician, you're an activist, you're unemployed, at me, I don't know, I sort of live that. I mean, I've never known anything else. I think my love for music and my love for the world that spurs me into activism come from the same source. They're ultimately a sensitivity to almost the dramatic contours of the world. You see it in music and it affects you deeply because it speaks to something that we all share. When you look at the political landscape and you look at the world and you recognize those things that we all share and you recognize how they are limited and oppressed by the political structures, it's that same impulse that leads me to make music like this and leads me to make music that makes people happy is the impulse that leads me onto the streets to fight for justice. My love for music is my love for justice, and my love for justice is the thing that makes me appreciate music.
How long until you answer the call?
So for all of my life, I have had a general underlying sense that things should be good instead of bad, which I think a lot of people do, and a lot of sensitive people do especially. I can tell you that early musical influences on my activism, or early cultural influences, was we used to listen to a lot of Les Miserables, the musical, in my car when I was growing up, which is all about fighting against oppressive governments for justice and doing it with a song.
Will not be slaves again when the beating of your heart echoes the beating of the drums. There is a life about to start when tomorrow comes.
And then, of course, you know, my favorite movies were Star Wars and these sorts of things, which are all about revolution as well. And so as I grew up, became a little bit more politically engaged, I viewed art as the principal means by which I could have a political effect on the world. Going out there making inspiring art, like the art that inspired me, I could, you know, contribute in some meaningful way to the betterment of the world. But it was a couple of events, mainly the election of Donald Trump, the vote for Brexit in the UK, the re-election of Malcolm Turnbull in Australia, all in 1 year, and more than anything else, Paul Ryan. The former head of the Republicans in Congress, he is a ghoul of a man. He is absolutely devilish. He said one day that his favorite band is Rage Against the Machine.
Rage Against the Machine guitarist Tom Morello smacked down Paul Ryan's compliment. Paul Ryan said that Rage Against the Machine is one of his favorite bands, more for the music than the lyrics, understandably so. Very liberal band. And Tom Morello wrote this great editorial in Rolling Stone where he went back at him and he said, I wonder what Ryan's favorite Rage song is. Is it the one where we condemn the genocide of Native Americans, the one lambasting American imperialism, our cover of F the Police? Or is it the one where we call on the people to seize the means of production? So many excellent choices to jam out to at young Republican meetings. Tom Morello's great.
This is one of the most ghoulish man in history. He has been one of the principal architects of the gutting of the American political system, the absolute gutting of the American middle class, the hawkishness of the American military. Paul Ryan, arch conservative, radical, much, much more radical than any of the left wingers in American politics. And his favorite band is the communist band Rage Against the Machine. Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. That demonstrated to me, and it made me very upset, it demonstrated to me the futility of thinking that you can stand up, say the right thing, and that's just going to make everything okay. I know Rage Against the Machine are activists, they've donated shitloads of money to people. I'm not, no shade on Rage Against the Machine, I love Rage. But the thing is, if you want a good world, you can't just convince people that the world should be good. You have to go out there and demonstrate to them what a different world might look like. To finish the story, 2016, I got involved in activism because I saw that the ways in which I'd put my effort into trying to make the world better weren't working. I couldn't change the world for the better at the ballot box. And so I had to do something. At this stage, I got interested in socialist ideas. I sort of, prior to that, had just imagined that socialism was entirely discredited. But stumbling upon a sort of actual radical left media and sort of theoretical critique in 2016 made me realize that you could actually pursue political aims outside the ballot box. So I got involved in socialist organizing down here in Melbourne, and via that, got involved in Extinction Rebellion. As I was sort of still coming to terms with what I really believe politically, the methods and aims that I want to pursue as an activist, I came to realize that Extinction Rebellion is where I want to be. Their methods and their culture, I think, are much better designed to withstand the difficulties that are coming down the pipeline. And I see XR as a vehicle for genuine transformative change in socio-political economic arenas, not just on climate change. So the artistic dimension of Extinction Rebellion is one of the first things that really attracted me to protesting in that way. Having come from, again, socialist sort of organizing, where the overall culture and method and, for lack of a better word, vibe, is extremely aggressive. And look, I'm not a sort of fence-sitting liberal that thinks you have to be polite to everybody. But at the same time, it's not fun. It's not regenerative, to use a word from Extinction Rebellion, to imbibe and express hatred all the time. If you are fighting for the world on the basis of love and you live within hate, you have to include what is worth fighting for in your fight, which is art.
We shall overcome some.
One of the earliest contributions I made to Extinction Rebellion, quite early in its sort of genesis in Melbourne, was by playing, you know, classic rock songs at rallies and getting everybody to sing along. We had several rallies out the front of Parliament, attended very, very sparsely by about 25 people when XR was just getting going, and I was, you know, front and center playing David Bowie songs and Pink Floyd songs and protest music as well. I really got into Joe Hill, who's a sort of old union labor singer, Pete Seeger, who people might know a bit more, and Woody Guthrie. Love that music, and I learned a lot of those songs. And so playing things like We Shall Overcome and Pie in the Sky and various sort of famous protest songs at XR protests was one of my big early contributions.
We shall live in peace.
In terms of my own personal art making, I can't not sing about the horror of the world now. One of the great ironies is I'm making a record at the moment for my band Beastfolk. Beastfolk is me and another guy, Stu, who've been around for a while. We've been making music for a long time. We're just gearing up to put our first record out, and it's music that we wrote 5 or 6 years ago. What's really, really striking about it is that I'm exceptionally proud of the music and so happy that I made it, but it seems like a totally different world because it's about going to parties. It's about not being able to communicate with your partner very well. Pretty sort of small fry stuff. And so to be making this record, which again, I'm immensely proud of, and it's going to be incredible. It's the best thing I've ever done. I feel like I have to, with everything else I'm doing, I have to scream as loud as I possibly can about the climate, which is why you get tracks like The Call. Because if I'm going to be making anything other than this, you know, brilliant project I've been working on for 5 years, if I'm going to be putting anything out, it has to be on topic. I can't not write about the climate now or other future horrors in the case of Praise Be. I feel like I have to make my voice as loud as possible. I think if I'm going to continue to be an artist and I continually wrestle with the tension, because to be a great artist, you have to be kind of selfish. You have to say that what I have to say is really important. It's actually so important that I'm going to not be out on the streets. It's so important I'm not going to be out there making money or whatever good thing you think you might want to do. I'm going to have to do this. I'm going to have to sequester myself away to make this. I have to be selfish. And at the same time, I want to give as much to the world as possible. and so one of the ways I work that tension out is by making my art really, really on topic, to feel like I haven't wasted that time. I haven't been entirely selfish by sequestering myself away. I can come out with something that is relevant and then I can tell, give to people and say, just listen to how fucked we are.
And now, in its entirety, here's The Call by Echo, or Mark Conroy.
Thank you.
Find a link to Mark's SoundCloud in this episode's show notes. Thanks to Mark for his time, both in making climate-engaged art and for talking to me about it. And thanks to you for listening to Artbreaker, the show where creativity and climate engagement collide. This episode was produced by me, Mark Spencer, but it's a team behind Artbreaker, and we're always looking to connect with other creatives. So if you've got a story to tell, or one you want to help us produce, just get in touch at hello@climactic.fm. You have been listening to a podcast on the Climactic Collective, the podcast network for Australia's climate community. To find out more about us and all the shows on the network, visit climactic.com.au.